Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey guys, Mark Striegel here of the Talking Metal Podcast. Welcome to another episode. All right, let's thank the patrons. And I just typed in Patreon on my computer here and spelled it wrong, and I ended up on the Patron website, which must be a sign. It's a sign from God that I need tequila as soon as possible. Tequila messes with my mind, I'll tell you that. And it also is something that I love while I'm actually drinking it and don't love so much the next morning. But anyways, let's try that again. Patreon, not Patron. All right, here we go. We got 51, striving to get back to where we were, which was, I think, 53 at one point. And we were down to 50. Now we're back at 51, thanks to Eddie the Head 83. And another one from the UK, which is awesome. We have such great supporters across the pond there. And Eddie the Head 83, it means the world to me. And I am sending you a t-shirt over there as soon as I can. I'll probably get it in the mail this Saturday. So what? Usually a week or two to get over to England. And wow, I am totally stupid because Eddie the Head 83, I just looked at your address here and I saw London as the town city, so I thought you were in the UK. I am obviously mistaken. You are in Canada. So we have such great listeners up in Canada. We do. We have a lot of listeners in the UK, in Canada, and of course the United States of America. But I would say those are the strongholds for Talking Metal, and I love all three of those places. I've been to them before. I spent 2 weeks in the UK over in London, not the same London that you're from, Eddie the Head 83, the other London over across the sea there, but you're London, Ontario. So cool. Eddie the Head 83, I will mail a t-shirt out to you probably this weekend, and it usually arrives quickly to Canada. So let me know when you get it. If you want to take a picture of yourself, I will definitely put it on my Instagram. So, yeah. All right. I'm dragging here. Sorry, guys. Let's get moving. Nick Beach, Down Under. Hope you got your t-shirt, Nick. Mrs. Metal Dan, Sam Warwick, Kato Yogova, Adrian Cusick, Dane Damage, Madison Hatter, Seth B., Alan Janssen, Hank Reeves, John Simpson, Huckney Jacobson, Ed Ferguson, Denny Striegel, Patrick Sabin, Jerry from Salt Lake City, Blue Walsh 21, Victor Guzman, Gene Eugene DX, Sean Richmond, Mario Charance, Andrew Miller, Jeremy Weltman, Chris Riley, Johan Erdestrom, Stephen Rodriguez, Tommy Anderson, Gregory Muse, Kenny McCrimmon, Leo Shaben, Brad Dahl, Dan Gurwan, Victor M. Ruiz, Sam Soupy, Drake, Matt Carroll, Joe Ryan, Jason Seth, Steven Saylor, Ron Keel, Jean-Francois Blah, Anthony Mackey, James Bennett, David Gray, Fred Rutz, Michael Streep, Mike Jones, Steve Hoker, John Bovary, and Metal Dan, our longest running supporter since July 2017. You rock, Metal Dan. And you know who else rocks? Phil Lewis of LA Guns. First timer. We're having a bunch of first timers, and they just aren't nobodies. They're big time, at least to me. Guys like Doug Pinnick and Phil Lewis. They're people I've been listening to for years and enjoying the music they've been creating for decades and decades. So to finally get interviews with them here on this podcast, which has been going on since 2005, I don't take it for granted. It is a big deal. And again, what an honor to talk with Phil Lewis of LA Guns. Let's get into the episode. All right, let's get right into our interview here with Phil Lewis of LA Guns. It was, again, just really fun talking with him. Loved hearing the stories about Don Arden. You guys know who Don Arden is, right? He had Jet Records. Remember Ozzy's old label? And ELO's old label. So Phil Lewis was on that label. So we're going to talk about Don Arden. And of course, Don Arden also gave us Sharon Osbourne, literally Sharon Osbourne's father. And we're going to talk to him about the brand new LA Guns record. We're going to talk to him about some old LA Guns music. And we're going to talk to him about the gig he did in 2019 with LA Guns at the Iridium in New York City. So let's get into the interview right now here on the Talking Metal Podcast. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and joining us for the first time ever, we have legendary vocalist Phil Lewis. Phil, how are you, man?
I'm all right, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I was just reminiscing with my wife about seeing LA Guns and you back in 2019 at the Iridium in New York City. Such an amazing, fun night. Man, any memories of that show?
I got a lot of memories of that show, yeah. In many ways, it was kind of one of our last shows because it was before this awful pandemic hit, and we had no idea what was just around the corner. And I remember it being a really, really fun night. I remember it being an absolute pain in the ass to get our equipment in and out, to park a tour bus. The logistics of it were a nightmare.
Right.
It really
right.
was. But the gig itself, I felt like I was on hallowed ground to start with, because it was Les Paul's joint, and it had, like, you know, backstage, it's got the chair that Les Paul used to sit in and play, and there's so much history, such a great vibe there. And the show was packed as well, as you know, and it's a little bit different than a regular rock show. I felt, honestly, it was bit more of an exhibition than a gig, because it was a seated audience, and I got the impression that many of the people in the audience were in fact musicians. That just had that, it's just got a musician's vibe, that crowd. We brought our best game. We didn't go over the top. There was no reason to go over the top, because, as you know, as I said, it's kind of more of an exhibition than a gig. And I remember it being packed, us playing great, and it going down absolute gangbusters, and just thinking, wow, I can't wait to come back here again, hopefully next year. And of course that didn't happen, but it might happen again. I liked it because it was we've been playing bigger rooms up until that point on that specific tour. That was a nice intimate show that night, and yeah, I remember it very, very well, very fondly, actually.
Yeah, and I mean, me too. I remember it so well. And I think because of the pandemic, it's interesting. Some of the really good shows I saw in 2019, like LA Guns at the Iridium in New York City, I just replay them over and over in my head. So I can't wait to get you guys back here. Is there currently a plan to start touring again?
The plan is, the record drops on November 11th. We've got a show that night, and then we've got half a dozen so shows between then and the end of the year, mostly local stuff in the LA area, got a couple of shows at BAMF in Vegas, and then our usual New Year's Eve at the Whiskey.
Right on, right on. And you mentioned the new album. I mean, every 2 years now, it seems like we're getting a new LA Guns record. The Missing Piece in 2019, The Devil You Know in 2019. Here we are in 2021, 2 years later. Checkered Past is on the way. Did the pandemic cause this record to come, or are you just kind of on a 2 year schedule now?
Well, 2 years, you know, like I grew up in the 70s listening to 70s bands, and I remember every couple of years, you know, a band released an album, and that's just the way it is, and that's the way it should be, and that's the way we've always operated. We would put a new album out every 2 years if we had the chance, but you know, back in the day, things were all messed up, and since this reunion, we've been on such a straight, strong trajectory that it hasn't been a problem. And actually, the pandemic was kind of a blessing in disguise. Now, the first three since the reunion were recorded traditionally in the studio, and I'd fly out to New York and I'd do my vocals with Mitch Davis, and it was just great. It was we had a system that worked. Now, obviously, there's no flying out to New York to record. And, you know, we had a lot of challenges, and mostly the fact that I would have to get back. I have to hone up my recording skills, get my engineering skills back, and do the vocals here in my place, in my house.
Right.
Built a vocal booth under the stairs, kicked out Harry Potter, and put a microphone in, and it was just me. It was just me and the computer. So I would have to rewind the session 10 or 15 seconds earlier than I needed, put it in record, get up, run under the stairs, get my headphones on, get the vibe right, get in my head, and come in on my cue. And that certainly kept me fit. And it was a challenge, you know. I think that we should feel really good. We put out a really formidable record under very trying circumstances, and we do feel really good about it. And it doesn't sound fragmented. It doesn't have that recorded in a bedroom vibe or any of that. It sounds like a real record, and we got to thank Adam Hamilton for that, because he compiled it. We were sending all the files to him. He put it together. He played drums on it because he's set up as a producer, a studio set up for drums, and he's an excellent drummer. So you've got to give big credit to Adam Hamilton, who has not only been our drummer, he's been our bass player and our rhythm guitarist. The
right
only
on.
Thing Adam's done in the band is sing.
Right.
And I wouldn't put that past him either. He's brilliant. He can do anything. And he played a big part in this record and us making it possible to do it in isolation.
Right on. And so many great songs off the record. The first track, Cannonball, just an explosive lead track. Let's talk about this song. I mean, in some ways, when you listen to it, it almost sounds like, you know, pirates out at sea at war, but is this really like a big metaphor for something else? I don't know. I'm actually asking you that. Or is it actually about being out at sea and you know,
being a video for it.
What's that?
We made a video for it.
Yes, I saw the video, yeah.
And you saw that it's very camp, it's all very dressed up in pirate, for me anyway.
Yeah, cut with the ships, with the cannonballs. Yeah,
No. There's no metaphor. It's not about anyone. It's not about ex band members or anything like that. It's a pirate fable. It's a high seas adventure, and
right on.
their soul, and it was a character that I could I really enjoyed getting into, and I knew when I was doing the vocals and I was recording vocals and putting it together, I knew it was going to be a monster, and I was just really I couldn't wait to put an old naval hat from the 16th century and a big powder wig. I couldn't do that quick enough. It was always in my head that I was going to do that. It was a bit tricky because the record company Frontiers, they didn't quite get my vision. They wanted to do two videos. They wanted to do Cannonball and Get Along. And they were really more focused on Get Along. And Cannonball, they were just going to have us like perform in a room and then cut various cool scenes from the bad streets of Hollywood. And I was like, well, I'm going to look pretty fucking funny in my pirate outfit in the mean streets of Hollywood. And they're like, well, what do you mean? And I had a whole thing. I had the idea of it all figured out even before they took a single frame of the video. I wanted the first shot to be close, and then the second part of the verse to be further away, and then the chorus, you know, where I'm swinging a saber and I'm pulling off the wig and just really like 100% in like the full-on pirate fight. And they loved it. They really, really, you know, they didn't know. But once I wrote, told them, and then I showed up with the various costumes and whatnot, they're really, really into it, and it revitalized their enthusiasm for the song. They were good. Like, oh, it's a good song, it's a great, you know, opening song. But no, that's the whole vibe for this next tour. I will be dressed like that. The whole pirate theme, old captain on the high seas theme for me. Before it was the devil. It was the devil, you know, and I get all devilly, and it was all about pentagrams and all about, that kind of stuff. This is a different vibe now. This is the high speed. And it's all a romp. It's all a good laugh. Now, we weren't devil worshippers or anything like that. It's just a romp. It's pantomime.
I got you. Cool. And again, we're talking about the new L.A. Guns record, Checkered Past. Another just awesome song, Knock Me Down. In a way, this has like this defiant tone to it. It almost like feels like a comeback song to me. Now, I know you guys have been doing the reunion for a number of years now, so maybe it's not a comeback song, but how do you view this song?
Well,
Knock Me Down.
I've noticed that on this record, for the most part, I've been singing in a much lower register.
Right.
And it starts off in a voice that is unusually low for me, but it's got a vibe. It's got an urgency to it, and I wanted to have a really strong contrast between the crystal chorus. It's such a bright chorus. I wanted to have a question, you know, more on a talking level during the verses, and it's got you know what would have been considered in the 80s, that would have been, it's got all the makings of what they call a radio hit when they played that kind of music.
Absolutely.
On the radio, and yeah, it's very, very commercial. I like that one too. It took me a little longer. Some were easier than others. I mean, Cannonball was a breeze. I did that in a day because I was so into it. But other stuff like that took a bit longer.
Right on. Yeah. And you mentioned the song Get Along. I guess there's a new music video for that coming out later this week, which by the time we post this interview, I guess it'll be live. But what should we expect? Is it a music video more along the lines of just the band on a soundstage, or what's that music video going to be?
Well,
like?
It's a big contrast from Cannonball, Now, this is actually one of those old, like, typical MTV videos with a story in it, with actors, and it's a it's a whole premise of a dad and his daughter. They're living on a hard time in the mean streets of Hollywood, and dad's a bit of a drinker, he's a bit of a boozer, and she's, you know, getting really frustrated and upset by it, and you know, it's a whole little mini movie all condensed in 3 minutes, and at the end of it he's like, no, fuck it, I'm gonna be good for my, I'm gonna be straight. He's pouring all his liquor down the toilet, and it's a big happy ending. Now for that one, I didn't want to upstage the actors or you know,
right,
make it about me, so I just real low key pair of overalls, old straw hat. And it's a very acoustic, it's got a real, the vibe of the song is very like Led Zeppelin 3 vibe to it. You know, of all their records, we're huge Zeppelin fans.
So right.
I think that's pretty obvious. Of all their records, it was really the most folky. When Tracy came up with that those beautiful chords and that progression, it was a refreshing change, and as I said, it's the complete polar opposite from Cannonball.
Right on.
And that's the nature of this band, is that, you know, we take on any style and we make it our own. We're not a one dimensional band. We don't just do the what bands are like, the, you know, Maiden, Motorhead, AC/DC, and they're really fucking good at it. But we're more in sort of Cheap Trick, Beatles kind of, okay, we did that. Now what should we do next? And let's try doing it, you know. And for me personally, that's a lot more fun, a lot more challenging, and a lot more interesting. And I love that about Tracy. He really just, you know, he comes up with an album in about a week of great chord progressions and great music. And he just lets us go with it, lets us run with it, and the songs, I won't say they write themselves, but it's just, you know, they have a leaning of how they're going to be. Like Living Right Now, which is, I think, maybe my favorite song. That was the one that when I first heard the music, it was like, oh yeah, I'm going to really, really sink my teeth into this one. And I think it turned out great. Bit of a sleeper, nobody's really noticed it yet, but it's the thing about this album, it's got quite a lot of humor in it,
right?
And it's a funny song. It's got me in my full, you know, English accent going, keep running, Dave, in between lines of the song, and it definitely, hopefully, comes across as it being a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And you know, you've gotten such a great response from the fans, from the critics, on these last few records. Is there a plan to bring more of these songs into the set list when you are out there playing live, or do you feel like you really have to play most of the old classics?
It's a bitch, man. It really is. That's our big conundrum. You know, we write these new records, and we know full well that 70% of what we're writing is never going to get played live. It just can't, just because of nature. You know, we can't escape the fact that we, for want of a better word, are something of a nostalgia act. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm proud of our past. I'm proud of our legacy. And it just entails that we have to play those songs, which, so in my cynicism, I call them songs from the last century,
right?
which they are, and they're great and everything. But yeah, it's a killer knowing. It's a killer picking out the three that we're going to be doing live off of each record, and occasionally we'll try another one here and there and put it in, but. You know, for the most part, we know that Let You Down, Cannonball, and Get Along are going to be the three from this album that we're going to focus on live. And hopefully down the line, maybe, you know, we can add something to it. But it's very difficult, you know, because we've got to do our set factions, we've got to do our electric jigs, we've got to do our ballad game, as we should, because that's what people pay for, and many people want us for that. A lot of people might not want a whole set full of new stuff just because we get our jollies doing it. Tracy had an idea of doing two sets tonight, splitting it up, doing eight songs of nostalgia and then eight songs that we'd love to do ourselves. And I think it's a great idea, and it's something that we might be able to look into, but not after taking almost 2 years off.
Right.
You know, I don't want to reinvent the wheel when we were first coming out. I've got enough to deal with the three new ones and getting the whole thing back without doing a reformatting the entire vibe of rock and roll, actually, not just us, but doing that.
Yeah.
It's a great idea, but I don't think we're quite ready to do it.
I gotcha. Cool. You did revisit the entire Cocked and Loaded record on the live stream that you guys had last year.
Yeah.
What about that type of setting live? Would you ever consider playing in a touring situation, an album from start to finish?
That was the plan. We were going to do that, but this fucking pandemic messed it up. It was that we totally had that on the cards. That's why we were able to do the live stream, because we all learned it. We're all expecting to do it and looking forward to doing it. And unfortunately, we only got to do it once for a live stream. So that's just the nature of the very strange upside down world the last 2 years have been.
Right on. It is the 20-year anniversary of the Man in the Moon album, which was kind of an interesting time, I think, for hard rock music in general. What do you remember about that album and just that history of LA Guns?
I've been away for a long time prior to recording that record, and I was out of business. I've been out since like 92, 93. When I was pretty convinced at the time that I was done as a professional musician. I had a raising a family, had a regular job, a job that I liked. It was a 9-to-5, but it was a good, it was a editing job, a audio editing job. I worked for Fox, the Sports Network. And I really enjoyed it. And I liked people that I worked with, and many of them were ex-musicians, and I was there for a few years, and I got really good at it, and they treated me really well. I was promoted, and I had my own studio, and I was enjoying it, you know, making commercials, Fox commercials for the Brazilian Grand Prix, and golf commercials and stuff like that. I'm not a big sports fan or anything like that, but it was just a good gig, and I enjoyed working with people. And I honestly, for the most part, in my heart, I felt like I was done. You know, music was just going to be kind of a hobby for me from that point on. And then I got the call saying, look, you know, we want to get back together. We want to re-record the first two records, and we want to see if we've got a new record in us. And it was an exciting time. It's not a very hard rock record. I mean, you know, Man in the Moon itself is almost kind of a funk vibe to it.
Right.
And because there was a lack of focus. It was a more broader kind of a vibe. We had Mark Dutton playing bass for us at the time, and he's real jazz. He's real, you know, played with the Black Crowes, and not that they're a jazz band, but you know, They're a bit more intricate than say Pretty Boy Floyd, you know. That's no offense,
it's right? Like, you know, right.
And he's a busy bass player, and he you know, he's got high standards. So he drew us into the sort of funky direction, certainly for the title track of the record.
Yeah, there's some great songs on that record. Beautiful is great. Don't Call Me Crazy. Two really good songs.
No, it's good. It's a real labor of love because coming back and writing it from scratch, and I thought I was done. I didn't think I was going to see these guys ever again, and I thought I was done with it. So it was interesting. It was a nice, it was pleasant and good to be back. Oh, and then when we released it, we had a fantastic tour. We had about 50 dates, and we only played Hard Rock Cafe.
Oh, wow.
And every night we'd play a different Hard Rock. And just driving around, getting on the tour, you know, playing the show, getting on the bus, going to sleep, waking up the next morning in another town. So taking over the Hard Rock, you know, putting up, you know, they completely had the venue at our disposal. And we'd be sound checking all day, and it was a lot of fun. That was a great, great tour, and the Hard Rock people took really, really good care of us and didn't feel like work at all.
Cool. Final question for you, Phil. You, of course, started your career back in the band Girl, and we all know that Phil Collin from Def Leppard was also in that band. But I wanted to ask you about the band signing to Jet Records. Now, your label mates, I assume, would have been like Ozzy Osbourne and ELO. Yeah. And the guy who ran that label, owned that label, was the, I don't know if notorious is the word, but we've definitely heard the stories about Don Arden, Sharon Osbourne's father. Any memories of him and dealing with him? What was he like?
Oh, I could talk about this all day. It's fantastic. Well, first of all, I put a band together in 1979, early 80s, called Girl. It was kind of an incendiary punk sort of a thing. We were influenced by, I don't know, like television, Tom Petty, The Cars, right. A band called Japan in England, who were big at the time. And I was seeing an actress, Britt Eklund, who'd been with Rod Stewart, who was involved in a project that Don was working on. And she told him about her new toy boy has a band, and he should check us out and give us a deal. And God knows, he actually did. He went along with it, and he did sign us. And it was a very short-lived thing. It was only lasted 2 years, and it started off great and ended really badly. Don was around. I became real good friends with Ozzy because, you know, Sharon and Ozzy had just gotten together, and he was working on his first solo record. And so we'd see him a lot in the office. We didn't really see much of ELO or any of those guys. But Don was a character. He was a real fascinating character. And just recently, I finished his autobiography, and it's so, so funny. And once I wish that I'd read that book. I wish I knew what I know about him now when I knew him.
Right.
I was a little intimidated, but there was no reason to be. You know, he just lays it out. You know, he wanted, if people wanted to be a star, he could make you a star. And, you know, like a lot of people, a lot of fans, a lot of musicians, he broke, didn't have a pot to piss in. They were living at home. So he'd get them a house, and he'd get them a car and a driver and a housekeeper for the house. And all that stuff costs money. So what he did was, he'd be like, you know, when the band got paid, and you think he'd take a percentage of it to cover what he'd spend on taking care of it. And a lot of musicians resented that.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big reason why he got a bad reputation. I highly recommend the book. It's called Mr. Big, Don Arden. It's kind of hard to get here, but I managed to get a copy sent over from a friend.
Wow,
and I've really, really enjoyed it. In this downtime, I've been reading a lot of biographies. I read Peter Grant's biography, the manager for Led Zeppelin. Peter Frampton, guitar player from Humble Pie. But there's a lot of 70s autobiographies floating around. And, you know, as I said, I grew up, that was a big influence for me growing up musically. So it's great getting insight. And even though it might be, you know, decades later, I really feel like I get to know the characters in the book and people that I knew and loved for the most part, and their take on it all. And Don was all right, I've got to say. Yeah. I wish he was around. I would give him a high five now.
Right on.
You know, and he put that. Nobody else. You know, we weren't very good, to be honest. You know, there was, and we weren't very commercial. He just took a chance on it, and it just sort of snowballed. It was a tiny little snowball, and my career has gradually gotten bigger and bigger. But that's where it started. That's how it started. I've got to thank Britt Eklund, and I've got to thank Don Arden for putting me on the map.
Absolutely, absolutely, and thank you for, you know, continuing to give us such great music. And fantastic. Giving it to us frequently. Checkered Past is out when, Phil? November what?
11th.
11th. Great. Yeah. And I hope to see you live in 2022. I really do. Let's get you back to New York City. Phil? Oop. Hey, Phil, I lost you. Anyways, we're pretty much done. I don't know if you hear me, Phil, but I lost you. All right, man. Take care.
Yeah, so kind of a weird ending. I never said goodbye to Phil. It just, I don't know what happened. He just disappeared. But we were pretty much done with the interview. So that's that. Yeah, odd ending to the interview, which was a fun, good interview. I know the quality of his call wasn't the greatest. You know. It's wild how some people will have a mic plugged in. They sound so good. Other people, it just sounds like they're on a cell phone that's, you know, 5 years old. Having said that, the quality of what he said, I thought was really good. The audio quality may have not been good, but listen, I'm not going to complain. When you get to talk to Phil Lewis for 25 minutes, it's a good day. It's a good 25 minutes. Doesn't get much better than that, right? All right. So thank you, Mr. Phil Lewis. And thanks to John Freeman for setting that up, of course. And definitely support LA Guns. Support Talking Metal by joining us on Patreon. You do $5 American a month. You will get a Talking Metal t-shirt mailed out to you anywhere in the world. And I'll tell you what, usually I've been saving these t-shirts just for the people on Patreon. But if you don't want to join Patreon, $15 if you're in the States, $20 if you're anywhere else in the world, and I will mail you out a Talking Metal t-shirt. We have all sizes. All right. That's not an offer. I'm really doing very much anymore, but I got to be honest. I restocked the Talking Metal t-shirts and I have like hundreds of them now. I gotta move the shit, right? All right. Talk to you next week, guys. Have a great week.